Fine Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Got some interesting pictures from folks that we want to talk about. Johnny, you know, something's on Johnny's persimmon. I can't see it exactly. It's not close enough for me to tell exactly what's going on. Boy, that's a beautiful garden, Johnny. Just great looking. But it looks like a longhorn beetle. I'm not sure that, you know, I don't know. I'll have to do a little bit more research. Generally, I don't know of a longhorn beetle that is specific to persimmons that would cause problems. But we will do some double checking and we will try to figure that out. Just not sure. The things that do affect longhorn beetles. The things that do affect persimmons, they're not. That's not what it is. That's an easy thing to say. Excuse me for having to think on the fly here. I don't think that's what it is. I don't think that's what it is at all. Hey, I promised I was going to talk about beans, and you may not want me to talk about beans, but you need me to talk about beans because beans are so easy. Josh, I hope you're still out there. I hope you're still listening. Josh had ordered some sweet potatoes, and the sweet potatoes aren't going to ship. They aren't going to ship because, you know, whatever happened this year, things getting difficult. It's getting hard. So he's got space for seeds. You know, one of the good things, and you'll be out there competing with lots of people for lots of different kinds of seeds. The good thing is that the seeds that do really well for us are not seeds that other people know about. So we're probably not going to run out of them. Probably not. Now, I will tell you that Southern Exposure Seed Exchange has had so many orders, they've quit taking orders. They're going to pick back up probably about middle of next week, I expect, and they'll start taking orders again, but there could be a delay. This is, if you want to start with beans, and you want to start, you don't need a lot of space. Do not, if you put in 25 feet of trellised beans, you're going to have so many beans, you won't know what to do with them all. There's no need to do that. And just 8 feet is going to produce an amazing number of beans. I know you don't believe me, but use different varieties. So use different varieties, but maybe plant 6 to 8 feet of Louisiana purple and 6 to 8 feet of rattlesnake bean. There you go. And some other things. Now, here's the good thing. Louisiana purple and rattlesnake are generally easily available from most seed and feed stores, traditional seed and feed stores. Old-time seed and feed may have them. I would check. I know that Phillips seed and feed has traditionally had them. I think they probably had them down at Irvington, down at seed and feed down there. So just check to see if you can't get some of the traditional rattlesnake or Louisiana purple. And I'm serious, 8 feet of any one pole bean is going to produce so many beans you won't believe it. So use a variety of beans in that row. Louisiana purples may be a little earlier. The rattlesnake beans will take up the slack and they'll go a little later. And then I'd save some space. Save some space in that 25 feet of row, Josh, for another type of bean. And you could do a winged bean, which can be planted much later, or lima beans, and they can be planted much later. After all of this crazy rush of spring is over, those seeds should be available. So it'd be great to plant your lima beans in late April or early May, and you'll be able to harvest them. You can plant your winged beans that late. So save some space in your row for those other beans and they'll be really good. If you have any questions about how to build a trellis, if that sounds really hard, you're thinking about it all wrong. It can be really easy. If you have to clear brush out of your yard, it's a great way to do it. If anybody's got any bamboo, there's a great way to do it. There's 1,000 easy ways to build a trellis. So let's talk about it. If you have any questions about how to do it, it's really good. Go ahead and get your tomatoes, get your beans in as quickly as you can, and we'll build a trellis. We can build a trellis next weekend if you want to. We can talk about how to do it, get it all ready for your beans. And it's really simple to do, but what a great way to get started. Oh, heavens, lots of questions this morning. Yeah, and I never get tired of answering this question. We answer a lot, but we're and I think about Taxman because I gave him the wrong answer one time, but I wish I had told him exactly. I wish I had listened to him better and answered the question the right way. So Chris in Saraland sends me a beautiful picture saying, seeing lots of these little guys popping up everywhere, and they really are amazing, aren't they, Chris? They're just full of flowers. They're full of these beautiful little flowers. It's like if you had a teeny little finger, you could stick your finger in that flower. It's a salvia. It's a sage. It's called lyre leaf sage. L-Y-R-E. That's the old common name. L-Y-R-E. Lyre leafed sage, because the leaves kind of look, when they're fully developed, they kind of have the shape like a lyre. L-Y-R-E. Like an old fashioned harp. But lyre leaf sage is what they're called. And they really are. They're beautiful all along the roadsides now. They're a little bit weedy, but not in a terribly unpleasant way. I keep thinking, is it wrong for me to tell you to enjoy your lyre leaf sages? Are they going to do something bad to you? I can't see that they're going to do anything bad to you. They're just really nice. The bees love them. The bumblebees love them. And they're a nice part of our spring. They're a type of mint. They don't have a lot of fragrance. They're not a strong mint. They probably have some medicinal quality, but I wouldn't worry about that. I just worry about the flowers. They're really nice. Really good. We're being warned about is that we the Listen Live feature may not be working right now. We may have to work on that. We'll be working on that. Got a couple of calls on that and see if we can figure out what the problem is there. It could be something at your end, but we'll be checking. Yeah, so Josh, you can get the rattlesnake from St. Elmo. Oftentimes LA Louisiana purple used to be really popular, but you know, check to see what they have and check it out. Blue cocoa is a great one. There's just a lot of really good early pole beans. He's already got his trellises up. Josh has already got his trellises up for vining squash and cucumbers, so one more trellis isn't an issue. Josh, I'm curious to know how you built your trellises. It's a really easy thing to do. Really easy thing to do. You know, one thing I did is privet is a huge issue everywhere, and I got privet coming up every place, and it's a pretty good thing for making trellises out of. I know that sounds crazy, but if you've got privet and it's coming up in your yard and it's driving you crazy, it's driving me crazy, you don't want it in your yard. It just spreads everywhere. And it can be very aggressive. Cut those privet branches back to, cut the limbs back to the ground. You can try to treat the stump. We can talk about that later, but just cut the privet branches back to the ground and cut them on a diagonal. Take your snippers and just cut those privet stems on a diagonal with a saw or with a clipper and just push them in the ground as deep as you can. Just push them in the ground as deep as you can. And oftentimes that's enough. If you can push it in the ground far enough, that's enough to have your trellis, and the branches themselves will have something for the for the beans to climb on. If you want a little more support, we'll come back and talk about that as soon as we get back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face. Hasn't stopped raining for days. My world is a flood.
Welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. We got... lots of questions this morning. We're working through. So somebody sent me a picture of a tomato leaf, and I'm gonna think about it just a little bit. But the tomato leaves are a bit distorted. And I'm gonna ask, because I gotta ask. Because it makes the most sense. It looks to me like you got a little bit of herbicide damage. So have you been using any herbicide, or has any of your neighbors been using herbicide around those plants? That's kind of what it looks like with those distorted leaves. Now, I'm not absolutely sure, and I'm going to be thinking about it a little more, but And don't get mad at me for asking, but I got to ask that question first, because it kind of looks, if I had to guess, and if I were looking at it real quick, I'd have said, herbicide damage is what I'm seeing. Josh, you know, those trellises will work really well. It would be nice to have them a little higher and supported up a little bit higher. Let me talk to you about trellises real quickly. Bamboo's great for trellises. If you got bamboo, it's just the best thing in the world. It's good to have, if you're going to have a, it's good to have some of the bamboo, because we get some high winds, and it can push things over. So you need things, you either need to put your poles pretty deep into the ground, or you do it, use a tripod. And tripods are very effective. Tripod poles are very effective. And what you do is if you create a tripod with three poles put in the ground, you can run another pole across the top of that to a tripod just a little bit farther away. And those tripods can be very stable. Because they keep it from moving. You put the pole across. Sometimes I put a diagonal across two, between the two tripods to help hold things. But there's one good way to do it, and it's just a really easy thing to make that out of. You can make it out of privet stems. You can and then if you put a pole from one tripod to another, or you can put a big cedar post in the ground, or you can put a big a treated 4x4 in the ground and run a pole across from one pole to the other, and then you could just take your privet stems and just poke them in the ground and lean them against the pole across the top, or the string across the top, or the wire across the top. It can all be very, very easy. You can use cattle panels. Some people do that. That's easy. I would make your trellis high enough that you can, when you reach, the top of it. Don't stretch too hard. That will give you the most efficient use of your trellis. The beans will cover that really quickly, but it won't get so high that you can't pick, right? So don't make it too high. Don't make it too short either. Get it up there as much as you can. Greg is asking me, will pressure-treated wood leach? Yes, the old pressure-treated wood did leach, and it leached arsenic. We're still trying to figure out how serious a problem that is. I don't think we fully know. But it could be a big issue. The modern pressure-treated wood, Does it have the kind of chemicals in it that are going to be harmful when they leach? They're made entirely differently. Copper is the biggest thing that they leach, and copper is not bad for you, as it turns out. We use copper a lot in our bodies, and it's not going to be a big problem. So modern treated wood is not a problem. Old treated wood can be, so be very careful. Got some callers. Catherine, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill.
How are you?
I've got some Spanish bluebells that are being crowded out where they are, and I need to move them. Can I move them before the limb, the leaves, or whatever they're called, die down?
Well, no. Let me just make it simple. If you do, you're really going to stun them because they don't put their leaves up until very late. They usually don't start putting their leaves up until January. They're really doing a lot of their photosynthesizing this time of year. This is the critical time for them to do photosynthesis. So give them just a little while for those leaves to ripen. Now, I will tell you, if you let the leaves ripen until about mid-April and maybe into late April, that'll be fine, and then you can dig them just before they start wilting. But I think you're probably going to really stun them if you move them now.
Okay. Should I wait until they actually have wilted?
No, as long as they're when they start to yellow and don't look as pretty, then you can move them. So you don't have to wait for them to wilt entirely, but just let them get. I mean, the big thing is it's like you're cutting off their mouth, and this is how they feed themselves right now is that sunlight, and they only get a few weeks of sunlight each year. So if you interrupt them during that critical period of time when they're absorbing sunlight, it's going to be bad. So wait until late April. I think that's probably good. If the leaves are still green, then it'll still be okay to dig them. But at least they've had a couple or 3 months to absorb the sun.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Catherine. Good to hear from you. Hey, PJ, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good to hear your voice again. I've been negligent on Sunday mornings. My mind travels and doesn't travel in the right direction all the time.
Hey, well, that's okay.
You might remember, I guess it was in January when my wife planted these sugar snap peas. I'm guessing it was the middle, maybe late January. But this morning, the first big handful, which is about 20 sugar snap peas, was picked by her lovely hands. So I just want to let you know that I don't know how long they're going to last or anything, but they, she said they look mighty good.
Well, if we'll get a little bit of cool weather, they can last a good long while. But boy, I love those sugar snaps. And those first ones that come in, oh, they're so good. They are so incredibly good.
We got some okra that recently germinated. Is it good to plant just about any of our regular springtime vegetables at this time?
Yes, probably. But let me tell you, here's the bad thing that's been happening. We've been getting these warm spells, and it feels really good to go ahead and get everything planted. And I think mostly this year we're past the cold, but we are slated for some below normal temperatures coming up. So I'd be cautious about eggplants. I don't think there's any need to plant eggplants right away.
Right.
I might be, but everything else, I think you're probably okay. I would normally be cautious about okra, but if your okra's coming up, that's okay too. It might get slowed down if we have a cold spell, but most everything else, I think you're okay on.
Very good. Thanks, Bill. It's great to hear your voice again.
Good to hear you. Thank you, sir. Bye. Charlie, that was it for our callers, right? And, we were having a little bit of a problem with our live cast, with our online, what do you call that thing? Streaming? Are we back with it?
Still not connecting.
Well, shoot. Fiddle, as we like to say. We're working on it, trying to get it back up. You're going to hear us on radio this morning. That's the old-fashioned way. Yep, yep. So this is very interesting. And you can get Radio App, which is a great way to sort of circumvent that. You know, here's an interesting thing. I don't know where that came from, and I'm really worried about this. We're seeing farmers spray lots of serious herbicides, and they're killing plants all over. They've been killing grapes, they've been killing peaches, they've been killing gardens, and some of the modern herbicides that they're spraying really can drift. And somebody just sent me a picture of a tomato that I am just 100% sure has got herbicide damage. And it came, and there's a big field across. So I'd be interested to know what they planted and what it is. Yeah, I don't think it's a good thing. And yeah, if there's that much drift, you ought to let that farmer know, because people are now suing about that. If there's that much herbicide drift, that's a bad thing. That's a bad situation. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Jim, we have some business to conduct. Jim in Georgetown, we're gonna do it. Jim sent me a question about loquats. You know, his loquats are awful small. There could be a lot of things going on there. That sounds really small. I'm not sure what's happening. It could be the dryness this year. I'm not sure, Jim. It could be the variety. Have they been big before? That sounds a little small. I would say that typically from stem to the bottom of the fruit, they're about as long as my thumb. Not much longer. But one joint of the thumb, unless you've got very long fingers, and you may, seems a little small. You can send me a picture, and I can maybe have some thoughts too, though I'm still not sure what the problem is. Still not exactly sure what the problem is. Listen, I'm very distressed by the picture I saw of the tomato that is suffering from herbicide damage, because I have a feeling we're going to see this more and more as farmers use new types of herbicides. And you know, you're hearing about Roundup now, but Roundup, we're using too much of it, there's no question. We're using it too frequently. But the damage done by Roundup is minor compared to the damage done by some of these other herbicide cocktails that they're now using. They drift. That means that they move off the target. If they get sprayed on a field, they will drift into your yard. They can do severe damage to young growing plants. And that is exactly what's happened. And I would alert that farmer, that this is going on. There are lawsuits right now, being fielded by people who have, for example, peach trees and grape and vineyards and other things, and drift from adjacent fields has killed their vineyard. It's killed their peach trees. It may not do it in a single year. It may take a couple of sprayings to do it, but over time, it can really do a lot of damage. In this case, it's done a lot of damage to those tomatoes. I don't think they'll recover from it, honestly. I really don't know what's going to happen in terms of whether the fruit's edible. But I think that you're going to have to start over with your tomatoes, because there's been some real damage there. And there's not an easy fix. So got a picture from Greg sent me some pictures. And his loquats are about the size of... oh, they're a little bigger than a joint in the finger of his hand, and they're awful good, and they can be really good. So maybe you're okay, and maybe in a wetter year, the fruits will be a little bit bigger. Maybe they'll be a little bit bigger. More beautiful pictures of amaryllis. Goodness gracious. The amaryllis are just incredible. Just absolutely incredible. Just incredible. All right. We got a caller. Ann, I'm listening. What's up?
Dan.
I'm sorry, Dan. My hearing is impaired this morning.
No problem, Bill. Quick question. Hopefully, speaking of tomatoes, hopefully it'll be an easy fix after listening to everything you said with kind of the previous pictures. I've got three different types. I started all of them right around February 7th, within the first week of February indoors. Went through, hardened them off as seedlings. It looked great. Just finished hardening them off. Put them, transplanted them into some large pots, or large containers, excuse me. There are three different varieties, and they all kind of seem to be frozen in time since I've transplanted them about a week and a half ago. They're all interdeterminate, so it's a delicious yellow pear, and also trying to grow some tomatillos. But they all seem to be stuck right on that 3 to 4 inch from when I transplanted them initially. And I'm not seeing any new growth. So I'm just curious if there's anything doing wrong here or something to kind of help progress that.
Well, they're getting lots of sunlight, right?
Absolutely. They're getting a lot of sunlight, generally about now at least 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah, and let me ask you this too: are they when you transfer them into the larger container? How big was that larger container?
I would say, right around like the equivalency of a 5 gallon bucket type.
Yeah, so they kind of got jumped up pretty quick in size. And they may actually struggle just a little bit to manage a jump in pot size that large, and there are several reasons why that can happen. But I think they're probably going to go ahead and go. Let me two things. The 5 gallon buckets have plenty of drainage, right?
Yes, they do on the bottom as well as the sides.
Good. And one other question, the potting soil you're using is what? What kind of potting soil?
It's a mix from the house. I do composting, and it's just a compost mix, and then to increase some of the drainage, I've got a little bit of vermiculite in it.
Yeah.
So here's what, with coconut core on top.
Yeah, so here's what I think there are multiple problems. I think your problem is in your mix, and I think it's not draining very well. Does the mix feel pretty moist?
It does feel moist, but it does settle a bit. So do I need to pull them out and then add in something to aerate that soil more?
Yeah, I think it's your soil. And it is very hard. Let me say this. So if I were going to design a mix for a pot myself, I would not use primarily compost, because it's going to, there are many reasons why compost works well in the soil and doesn't work well in containers. And so I think that's your problem. So what I would use, and Taxman and I spent many wonderful hours talking about this, is almost pure pine bark, which is what growers use. They don't use compost. They don't use anything too sophisticated, because it needs to drain. And it can be a real problem if you just use compost. And I think that's it. I think it's just too wet. And I think your roots are going to rot if you're not careful. You might also lack some nutrients, too, which could be an issue. But I think right now it's more about nutrient availability than it is about nutrients. In other words, I think it's staying so wet that your plants aren't actually able to use the nutrients, and it may get so wet that they actually have a problem. So, yeah, I'm not liking your mix. Here's what I would do. If you could find pure pine bark, each piece no bigger than your fingernail, and mix that 75-25 with your compost, you would probably be okay. You need that much drainage, and a little vermiculite isn't going to make that much difference. So you need 75% pine bark and 25% compost in those buckets. It's different in the ground, and I won't go into all the mechanics of why, but it's very different when you use compost in the ground. It's a very different thing. And if you used a little bit of compost in your pots, it would be okay, but it sounds like you're using primarily compost, and I think that's the problem. And
yeah,
I think it's going to be
a
worse
60-40 split, 40% in the vermiculite and 60 on the compost. So that's what it sounds like based on what you're saying. Is there a place you would suggest with that pine bark for good sourcing or anything like that?
Well, yes, I think A Bloom should have pine bark. Old Time Seed and Feed should have pine bark. I would think, I don't know all of the different places, but they all generally have pine bark in bulk that you could buy. Again, each piece should be smaller than your fingernail. When you get that pine bark, mix it. You can take your mix. You can take that mix and mix it 50-50. I think it'll be okay given that you got that much vermiculite in there. But mix it about 50-50.
Okay.
In the mix you have. Add a little bit of lime. I think it sounds like you probably could use some lime as well, because it depends on how much you make. But for a 5-gallon bucket, I would say you need a handful of lime in there, and mix it in well when you do it. And I think it'll be better. So go ahead and rescue those tomatoes before they rot.
Will do. Thank you, and take care.
All right, Dan. Good luck. Good luck. You know, it is very interesting that when we're in places like... When I read about gardeners in places like England and other places, they make their own mixes, and it's possible to do. But one thing about living where we do, and given the volume of soil diseases, given the temperatures, and given the amount of rainfall we get, and given our long growing season, all of these things mean that soil compacts very easily. It gets wet very easily. So if we're going to put things in containers, we have to have those containers very, very, very well drained. And that's what I'm trying to talk about. Carl, I'm going to get back to you just as soon as I can, because you're using one of my dad's favorite old names, Bullis. So we're going to talk about Bullises when we get back, and what a Bullis is and where that name came from. What a great old name, Bullis. Stay tuned, and we'll tell you all about it. Got some other calls that we need to make. There you go. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Every time I think about that herbicide damage, it's really, really a serious situation. Really a serious situation. For those of you who were worried about the transmission quitting, it should be back on. We're trying to work on that. We should be back to streaming now. I hope so. Beautiful pictures of amaryllis. Somebody sent me a picture of a camellia, Sasanqua. Well, let's just call it a camellia. And on the bottom of the leaves, there's a bunch of white powder. That's not actually a fungus. That's a scale. And what you're seeing is tea scale, and you got a pretty bad severe outbreak of tea scale. It's a type of insect. And that's the issue. So it's very easy to treat. It's very easy to treat. Just use a horticultural oil. I think that they're selling it now as All Seasons horticultural oil, which is fine. You can get it from multiple places. It's a really good thing to have. Horticultural oil, and just spray it on the bottoms of those leaves and on the top in this case, but just mostly on the bottom. You're going to get rid of that scale pretty quick. And that's what it is. It's a tea scale, really easy. It's a type of insect. It's a type of insect, believe it or not. But you'll see the lots of little babies beginning to move around this time of year, and that'll help you to know that it is an insect. What else have we got? We got more great pictures of amaryllis. Carl, I'm listening. What's up?
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good.
Good. I've got a question about. I've got out here in Bonskill. We got wild bullaces growing all over the trees up and around. My understanding is they're not. Like when you buy a grapevine, it's self pollinating. You're breaking up there.
Yeah, I'm listening to you. I'm hearing you.
Is there any way to tell? I've got a bunch of seedlings, and I got a friend that she wanted some. Is there any way to tell if a grape is a male or a female?
Not when they're young. Okay. So, but you've got the problem. You got it hit. So, first off, we could talk about bullaces. I'm so glad you use the word bullus. Bullus is an old word an old South Alabama and South Mississippi word. Usually it's an old European word that used to refer to a plum, but when people got to North America and they realized that there was these things growing in the woods that didn't look like European grapes, they called them bulluses. A bullus was a purple muscadine. So in general, people in the woods, people in the country still call purple muscadines bulluses, and it's a type of muscadine. A scuppernong is another name for muscadine that was popularized a while back, but they're all the same thing. They're all muscadines. Muscadines in the wild, you got it. Muscadines in the wild have male and female vines. This is not true often when you buy a cultivated muscadine. They try to get them so that they are self-fertile, so that they pollinate themselves. But in the wild, about half the vines, and sometimes it seems like more than half the vines, are male. And as you know, as we must admit, males are just absolutely useless at times, it seems like. They just don't do a dadgum thing, except pollinate females. And so you don't get any fruit off of them. I don't know of an easy way to determine whether the seedlings you have in the woods are male and female. I don't think there is an easy way. In fact, there's probably almost no way of knowing until they begin to flower whether it's a male or a female. And even then, you got to look real close. So no.
Okay, well, that's kind of what I was expecting to hear, but I guess they're actually coming up in a big. I got a mayhaw plant in a big pot that I got to figure out where I want to transplant next year, and they were coming up in there, and I was pulling them out and throwing them away, and then I realized that my good buddy of mine's wife was wanting some, so I was like, I'll just plant some of these for her. She wanted to put them on her fence, but so she may just get a decorative fence and no grapes.
Yeah, well, that's right, and it could happen, and they can be quite pretty. They will eat that fence, as you know, there won't be a fence to show after a while when those muscadines take off.
But tree out here, I guarantee you.
So yeah, I'm so
they grow up all of our pine trees and everything.
That's right. They are very abundant. You know, the Southeast is one of the great centers of grape and muscadine diversity in the world. We have so many different kinds, and it's really fun to go through the woods and look at them. Not all of them are humanly edible. They won't hurt you, but they don't taste all that good sometimes, but some of them are really delicious, and all the muscadines are good. It's just that, as you know, some vines are male. But listen, I'm so glad you use the word bullace. Just keep using it. And,
I'll do it, brother. You have a good one. Stay healthy.
All right, you too. Thanks. Bye. There it is. In that, it's so good to hear old-fashioned words like bullace that they still survive. It sometimes causes confusion, doesn't it? Because one thing about names is that names mean whatever anybody who uses the name means for it to mean. And sometimes people don't mean the same thing when they use the same name. That can make it difficult. So Wayne found a site that sells lupin seeds. Wayne, let me tell you that those lupin seeds are not the lupin seeds you have. They're very different. Probably they're a different species. We're just going to say that, and they're going to grow very differently. So don't contaminate your population with those other lupin seeds. I doubt they'll actually grow at all along the Gulf Coast. The stuff you get from American Meadows, the lupin seeds. They're like Texas Bluebonnet is a kind of lupin, but they don't do as well here because they're used to arid climates. They're used to dry climates. They're not used to what we have here. I will spell bullace because it's one of those things. When I say bullace out loud, which is a great old word, it means several different things, but generally the old name bullace is from a word that's spelled B-U-L-L-A-C-E. And it originally, as I said, referred to plums in Europe. Now it refers, if you hear it in the Southeast, it means a couple of different things. It means you're either fixing to give your cow a big pill, which is sometimes how we use the word bullace, or a bullace is a type of muscadine. I hear people talk about bullaces in the woods, and it always seems to refer to a type of muscadines. There it is. So let's see if I got. Somebody's asking me, they distributed cottonseed meal around the Satsumas, and it's starting to mold a little bit. Will that hurt? No. Here's what I would do. It's about time to mulch anyway. You can take some mulch, just lay it on top of that cottonseed meal, and you won't even know whether it's moldy or not. The mold is actually a way of breaking it down and making it available to the plant. It'll be just fine. Boy, this went fast. We'll be back next week. Save your questions till then. Talk to you later.
Song that Javi knew.